Vanguard is working hard to balance opportunity and risk for investors in this time of volatile yields. We know financial advisors are working hard to do the same. Visit vanguard.com/fixed income today. Important information. All investing is subject to risk, including the possible loss of the money you invest. Bond funds are subject to the risk that an issuer will fail to make payments on time and that bond prices will decline because of rising interest rates or negative perceptions of an issuer's ability to make payments. Vanguard Marketing Corporation, distributor.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Playing receiver's cooler now than it was when we grew up. You went home after a high school game, you're like, Mom, friends, we threw the ball 8 times today. I got to throw it 8. I'm like a Dan Marino of high school football, yeah. Right? Oh, yeah. What's up, everybody? It is episode 600 of Chris Sims Unbuttoned. Wow. Ahmed Farid is here. It's an incredible number. It's a milestone that we can't compare to anything. We don't even know anything really that's worthy of bringing up for 600. Only thing I think of is 600 club for home run hitters.
That's true.
Right? That's about all I got for
pretty
you
big
right
one.
There.
Yeah.
But it is a pretty big one. And, yes, we're not going to be talking about quarterbacks throwing the ball 8 times today. It is the cornerback edition, okay? Which also, as we know, is a very popular position
so I'm curious
in the
here.
World right now.
All the kids want to play receiver,
yeah,
right? And so you can't have every kid play receiver.
No.
So do those kids that are unable to play receiver, do they just automatically go over to corner?
Right. The ones that were like really fast and can fly, but then like can't catch the ball all that well.
And that's always been kind of the mantra for corners.
Right. Or have like an aggression factor maybe about them. Maybe they do catch really well, but they're like, wow, I mean, this guy's really like fearless of contact or anything. Those are the guys that get moved over. Or just have like this, attitude of in your face all the time. It's, you know, not like a receiver. He's always wanted to compete. And, you know, you can't tell him he's not the best. Even if you burn him 4 times in a row, he's still like, I'm the man. Try to burn me again. That's a corner.
Yeah.
They have a special mentality about them that I always have found infectious. You know that. Like, not only did I love Deion Sanders growing up and Daryl Green and that kind of guy. My best friends on every team I played on really ended up being corners. My best friend on the college team was a corner. My best friend on my Tampa Bay Buccaneers team, Dwight Smith, he was a corner. So I always kind of gravitated towards those guys.
It's a great way to live life.
It is.
Even if you mess up, get
it's
right
positive
back
positive all the time.
Short memory.
Right.
Yeah, I can still correct. I just scored a touchdown against you. I don't care. You're not going to do it again.
Exactly right.
Our crack research team did find a time where you threw the ball more than 8 times in high school.
We went
back. This is the New York Times.
Jeez.
The New York Times was writing about your high school games.
We were kind of a big deal.
This was the state title game.
Oh, yeah, which wasn't even one of my biggest, best games, really. I mean, geez, of all the games they picked out, they picked this one.
Here we
geez.
Go. I never had any doubt that we would win the game. This is a state title game.
Yeah.
Said Ramapoo Greg Toll. The game's leading rusher, 247 yards.
We killed him on the ground.
Jeez.
We had killed him.
Chris Sims as your quarterback, and you're running 25 carries for 247.
Here's the background to that. We played him the year before in the state semifinal game. We were the two best teams in the state.
Yeah.
And I threw for like 330 yards on like 20 attempts, right? I was like 15 to 20. And then we played them. We played them in the preseason before this year, and I threw for like, I probably threw 12 completions for like 300 yards, right?
So they were like, do not let Chris Sims beat us.
They played too deep the whole game, pretty much. It was the first time I ever played a team where I was like, wow, they're playing like this the whole game. And we ran it down their throats right on the concrete in the middle of Hoboken, New Jersey, and won a big one. They hadn't lost a game in like 3 years, Hoboken.
After throwing just 2 interceptions the entire season, Sims, 8 for 20, 113 yards, 1 touchdown, was picked off twice today.
But one was a check down to the running back.
That happen?
He was literally like, nobody was open, and I was going to like throw the ball to the back, and like I threw it safe, and they had a Division I running back who was playing middle linebacker, and he fucking dove and caught it, right? The other one was just a bad interception down the middle. I'll take blame for that one.
But here's what the New York Times writes.
Right.
But he managed to keep his composure, directing the Raiders' game-winning drive, hitting Mike Miano with a 14-yard pass in overtime to set up Keith Tornicia.
All right, get ready. It's New Jersey, baby. It's Miano. It's Milanese. It's Tornicia. Okay, that's how we're going.
A 3-yard touchdown run. Hoboken failed to score on its subsequent possession, and the game was over. You were state champions, completing 8 passes in the state championship game.
Big time performance there. Cold, freezing day.
I bet.
Right?
They played too
in Hoboken, where you could look down the 50-yard line and see the Empire State Building straight down the street. It was cold, windy, brutal, and this was before the Catholic schools started to dominate in New Jersey. Right now, the 4 or 5 Catholic schools, they can almost, they not only do they have like 10 to 15 Division I players on their team, they have like 5 NFL players on their team, like every year, and I'm not embellishing you. Me and you go to a game next year and watch Don Bosco play Bergen Catholic. You're gonna go, holy cow, I can't believe these are high school kids. And I'm gonna go, yeah. And I'm like, he's number 1 recruit, he's number 5 recruit, he's gonna be in the NFL. Like, it's gotten to that point. It wasn't like that when I was growing up. And Hoboken was the number 1 team in the state. All the Catholic schools, all of that, right? They hadn't lost a game in like 4 years. And that game that day did a better rating than the Rangers. We were on Madison Square Garden Network that day for the state championship game, and we registered a rating that was better than the Rangers that day. Right, it was like a 1-4 or something like that. But it was a big deal, big matchup.
That's pretty cool. So
in honor of that,
two people picking off the great Chris Sims. We're gonna look at the people who could be intercepting. Who knows?
Better
Patrick
quarterbacks
Mahomes
than me.
some other quarterbacks in the NFL currently. Let's take a look back first, as we always like to do.
Right.
Pete and I like to do this. It's like we look at your rankings from last year and go, where did Chris mess up the most? Because we would like to talk about that again. And also, perhaps, maybe, if it applies, say where you excelled here.
Yeah.
So Devin Witherspoon was awesome. In the conversation for Rookie of the Year, you loved him.
He was a man crush
last year.
Right,
you have a man crush this year,
I
too.
I do, yes.
Devin Wither, DJ Cheating Turner, who was a later pick. You were higher on him than most.
I was.
But definitely showed in Cincinnati that
became the starter.
Got some skills.
Yeah, became the starter halfway through the year, right? So, I mean, that's saying something. And, yeah, to me, he showed the skills. I saw that. The next guy was better than maybe I even gave him credit for.
Christian Gonzalez, unfortunately, got hurt.
Right.
But you thought what you saw was better than what you saw in college.
The thing that bothered me about with Gonzalez is we knew it was good. Remember, my big complaint was just like, I wish it was a little grittier and tougher and
he
more competitive.
Try to be too smooth.
A little too cool at times. Somebody catch a ball and he'd be more worried about like kind of getting out of the way so it doesn't look like it blamed on him, right? He didn't show any of that. And he got rave reviews from a group up there that I know in New England. Belichick and company are hard on their corners and they expect a lot. So he's obviously all that. And then my man from the Giants.
You were bigger on him, and then he ends up going in the first round because I think that was a borderline conversation where when we did the rankings, I don't think a whole lot of people had Deontay Banks in the first round,
right.
But then he ends up going there, and he was the kind of guy that Wink Martindale really liked, and he had a tough defense. It was a tough year for the entire defense for the Giants last year.
And it's a tough, they ask their corners a lot. We know that. But he's the guy. He's the guy, again, that like a guy like him emerges every year in the draft process. We're going to have one or two here that are going to emerge as well because it's not at a big school. Might have not been on the rivals.com top 10 guys coming out of college, right? He's not necessarily a big time name or a big time program where the draft pundits have like brought onto him. But I remember him, he was one that won the combine numbers. You went, whoa, that's like legit explosion, like NFL island type corner explosion. So that's intriguing. And then you turn on the film and you go, well, yeah, okay, Maryland wasn't very good, but this guy locks up everybody man to man. Like, he's in the face of everybody, right? And to me, again, that's the thing. As I do this, I like this, I love this position, and I edge or err on that. That to me is where it starts, right? If you can't play man to man in college, then what the fuck are you going to do in the NFL? Right? They can't call zone every play. right? And to me, that's where I think you always have every year a few guys that kind of come out of nowhere from that kind of that
type
of conversation.
So you look for the edge. Is it also a position where you look at the combine numbers more and you weigh those more than you would at other positions?
I would say it's up there, right. Exactly right. That defensive end, I think there's, you know, some other ones that are in that position where
you want the athletic traits to pop at the combine for the corners and the edge players.
It's got to. It's too much of a pure explosive position to where, like, if you can't go out there and show me how explosive you are when you're supposed to, then you're just not that explosive. That's what it is. And these are usually people that don't even have to think about that type of stuff. And as we always get into this, some of that stuff, speed, change of direction, length of arms, like, there's no denying there's a real formula to that success in the NFL out of corners and pass rushers, right? Or tackles, right? Offensive tackles with the arm length and all that. There's real things there. You know, every now and then you might get a guy that doesn't quite have that, right? But I guarantee he's got another trait like we talk about that's elite that covers for that lack of arm length or whatever that trait is that we don't get enough of. And that, you know, that goes for DBs too. Last year was, you know, really, you look back at it, it was a pretty damn good class overall.
It was. There's some players here for sure. And so Devin Witherspoon did go the first corner off the board, fifth overall to Seattle.
Yep.
I think the Lions were probably looking at him, and I think when they did not get him, they traded back.
Right.
Ended up getting Jahmyr Gibbs, and then that extra pick got Sam LaPorta, so I think that worked out pretty well with that. But Witherspoon went first off the board. Emmanuel Forbes, who you were lower on than most out there, was the second corner taken, 16th overall by Washington. And now what I say is a lot of times, like, these are self-fulfilling prophecies, because if you take a guy in the first round, you're going to play him because you don't want to be wrong the first year. And so fact that Washington actually did not play him in the first round, I think, goes to show that some of the things you were concerned about with him showed up on the field.
He is great, you're bringing me here. He is the other side of the story we just talked about, where there's some measurables you look at and all that. I feel like he's one where the measurables went a little too far. They went, wait, look at his length, right? Whoa, look at his straight line speed. Oh, he's got all these pick sixes, right? But I kept watching, and again, hopefully he fixes this. I'm never not rooting for the player. Mm-hmm. But, like, I know at the time last year, and we were just talking before the pod, the problem was I was like, but he can't flip his hips. He can't change direction. Anytime anybody runs some sort of route and he's not in the perfect position, he kind of looks silly adjusting to it. Right? So the change of direction ability, the flipping of the hips and recovering that way, that to me was where I was like, I don't know if I trust that all the way. It might work in some systems, but there's a lot of systems that it's not going to work. So that's what scared me. And you know me, I err more times than not than the guy who can play man-to-man rather than the guy that's, like, really good in zone.
All right, so we've kind of gone over what you look for when you're scouting corner prospects. Have you learned anything throughout the years? Are there things now that you emphasize more or look for more? Are there, you know, have you learned from a player that you may be missed on, maybe a player that you were right? Is there anything? How have you evolved?
No. Corner's one where I feel pretty good about it. I've had some misses. I know that, right? I know where, like, maybe I erred on a guy like C.J. Henderson from Florida, right? With great physical ability and all that. There was some plays where you'd go, ooh, I wish he would show a little more competitiveness or fire or whatever else. But, you know, I erred on that guy rather than, let's say, maybe a Jeff Okuda, where everyone was like, oh, his technique is so perfect. His hips are so good. You know, it was all this technical stuff, right?
I was so bummed when the Lions took him.
Well, that's where I don't get – so that's where maybe I've learned through the years is don't get so obsessed with the technical stuff. Yeah. Those are, again, coachable, teachable, learnable things. Mm-hmm. This is a position where pure physical ability is really where it's at, mm-hmm. right? You know, and then – so the technique and all that, you look at that too. And, you know, again, I tend to lean on the more explosive nature of the guy. Now, you know, hey, knowing the guy, his competitive nature and all of that, right? You know, that's a big part of it. And that was one of my things with Stingley, right? Stingley out of LSU, number two, three pick of the draft. I was just kind of like, man, I mean, he lets people catch the ball. It doesn't seem like he cares sometimes. People catch the ball, and he lets them run away from him. He doesn't even, like, care to go tackle them, right? Those are things that bothered me.
Yeah,
but obviously they knew enough about the guy to go, wait, we're not worried about that. We think he'll compete when he gets here.
That's a disadvantage you have,
that's
right?
Tough,
you don't get to talk to the guy. And for Stingley, too, you had to believe that his tape from 2 years prior was going to trump anything he put on tape the last year.
Right.
And it turns out maybe that is the case.
Maybe it did. Maybe it did.
Not a great rookie year for him, but bounced back last year.
The big thing is pure physical ability, and then this is another one where, you know, you can't just look at the results, right? A guy that's, you know, we got guys in this guy where I'd go, hey, he played zone the whole time. He never had to cover anybody. I'm sure his grades are great. Yep. This guy's out here. They're blitzing cover zero. He's got no help anywhere ever. Or he's playing man-to-man the whole game, and I'm sure his grades aren't that great. But I know with context clues, right, that this team believes in him, and whoa, does he have the ability. Yeah, he got beat a few times, but they ask him to play man-to-man a lot, right? And whenever it's a big down, they make him cover the best player. That tells you something, right? As compared to other teams and some situations we'll talk about where I go, wait, this coach, when he has good corners, he plays man-to-man. If he's not playing man-to-man, that tells you something that's going on there that he doesn't like. And so that doesn't translate to, oh, yeah, we're going to take this corner in the top 20 pick of the draft. And so those are, you know, it's all stuff, and we'll unpack it all here as we go.
What I will say is someone who has now been evaluating on tape corners for the past few weeks, maybe days is more appropriate.
Right.
I don't know how you do it. It's so incredibly difficult because you mentioned the best corners out there are not getting tested a whole lot, and so they don't have a whole lot on tape.
Yep.
And every corner is going to have a few plays where they look bad and get beat. And so it just seems like a very, very difficult position to evaluate from the tape, from what you see. Which is why you got to use the combine. You got to use the.
You got to use the combine.
Edge that
they
play
you got to watch the games, right? If you just watch
play by play.
If you just watch a tape of like
highlights.
Here's the 10 times they threw at him during the game, or the 7 times, right? You're just not going to get the full story there. Right, that to me is the big thing, whether it's the highlights or the lowlights that they usually kind of put on those type of things.
Yeah.
You got to see, wait, hey, it's 3rd and 7. Yeah, the ball didn't go to his side, so it might not be on some tape. But this guy over here didn't know the ball wasn't coming his way. He ran the route on the 15-yard out route as fast and as explosive as he can, and the corner was playing man-to-man. He didn't know where the ball was going either. So there's some value to it to go, they played it legit. And I saw what he did when that guy tried to move him or lean him or do whatever, and I got to see those movements off of that, and I think that's really key to watching corners.
So without further ado, we get into your countdown. We have a top five. We have, what, 3 tiers here. We have a tier to start it all off, tier number 1, who has one player and one player
only
alone.
Only one.
Your man crush
you
this
know
year.
It. You know it. This is my first man crush of the year.
Oh, you think it is? Your
I think
first
it's my
man crush.
First one of the
no,
year.
Caleb, you right?
Oh, well, yeah, you're right. I mean, I don't
and
even
Malik
count
Nabers.
Quarterbacks. I'm a horror for the quarterbacks, all right?
So. Your first defensive man crush. It's our first defensive ranking, but still. Tier 1, we're going to name this one Shutdown Cornerback 1.
Yeah.
You think he's a shutdown corner?
Oh, without a doubt.
His name is
Quinyon Mitchell, Toledo. His name is, if he played at a big time school, if he was at Ohio State or Alabama, he would be a top 5 pick, right? The only question about this kid is going, he played at Toledo, and the first thing that everybody's mouth is going to go out of their mouth is going to go, well, who did he play against, right? That's going to be the question. And then it'll probably knock him down a few spots in the draft, even though it shouldn't, because he has got it all. When you talk about the size, the length, the thickness of the body, right? To me, it's a very – here's some names and bodies that it reminds me of. Darrell Revis, Aqib Talib, right? There's some strength to this. This is not just some, like, fast, skinny corner. There's some explosiveness, and some real muscle fiber to the football player. He's the fastest, quickest, most explosive cornerback in the draft, along with the best ball skills in the draft. That's where it starts right there. Right now, you're not going to find a ton of, hey, he played, you know, Marvin Harrison Jr. and all that. I get that.
Although he did, actually,
he did. You did
2022.
2 years ago, right? But then into like the other parts of the conversation we talk about, right? He and his ability, like what he's the positions he's put in. He plays a ton of man to man, right? He plays off man-to-man more times than not, which is a lot like Devin Witherspoon was last year. Mm. And in a lot of ways, and I like it, because I go, this kid's got all the skills to become a really awesome bump-and-run corner. He just got to have somebody teach him a little bit, I'm sure, and get down that. But when you talk about the ability, one, backpedal, stick your foot in the ground and drive on the ball, I mean, it's flawless. It's as explosive as any person in the draft as far as that's concerned, right? The ability to, oh, wait, I think he's about to run a slant route. Oh, no, he ran an out route on me. I got to flip my hips and turn around and now try to drive on the ball because the quarterback's throwing him an 8 or a 10-yard out route. Oh, and I mean, his ability, again, to flip the hips, drive on the ball, accelerate, and those, to me, is the best in the draft. There's really not much that he's not best in the draft. He reminds me a lot of Devin Witherspoon from last year. He doesn't have as many highlight tackles, right? But he still has some tackles where you go, this dude is a heat-seeking missile.
Yeah.
And I think in a lot of ways, because of he's bigger than Devin Witherspoon, I think he has better pure man-to-man cover skills. And he's going to be more of a guy that you can go, wait, we can just put him on the outside and he can cover Ja'Marr Chase or T. Higgins, either one. Where Witherspoon was a little bit more slot value, this guy is going to be outside, cover the best receiver on your football team type of guy, shut down island type corner. I love Quinyon Mitchell. He's got it all, and I do think he is a top 10 pick. I do.
6 foot, 195, going to turn 23 in July, played running back as well as defensive back in high school, ran for almost 1,000 yards, was awesome. Maybe he could still play running back. PFF says, so this is the part that stood out to me.
Yeah.
He would align himself 8 to 10 yards off the line of scrimmage, keep his eyes on the quarterback,
wait
to pounce. Quarterbacks threw his way a lot because they didn't believe he could get there, and yet he often did.
Exactly.
So when I watched him, I knew how much you loved him. Right. And so I was like, all right, this is going to be a guy that's going to be up at the line like Deion Sanders.
Yeah, right.
And you see none of that.
Yeah.
Right. It's like I looked it up, 20 snaps all last year where he was pressed up at the line of scrimmage.
Okay.
So there were very few of them.
Yeah.
His teammate at Toledo, Chris McDonald, had 201. So it's not like it's a philosophy thing where they don't do it at Toledo.
They play man to man and they let them do how they want to do it.
That's comfortable. Okay.
Right? And he probably told him, hey, I like to play off. I'm comfortable here.
I can get there.
He's got very good instincts to your point where he can kind of see the drop and the play. And he really knows, like, ooh, they're about to do this. Ooh, they're about to do this. This isn't just some, like, oh, I can't understand football and I just cover the guy in front of me. He's got a little feel for the football game. But I think to me, again, the fact that he doesn't, what he's doing is harder. That's what he's going to find out.
Hmm.
It's harder. When he gets to the NFL and somebody teaches him a little footwork and how to use his hands, he's going to go, oh, man, you mean I could have done this in college and basically never let anybody run inside of me ever and then just gone like, hey, you have to go outside and I'm faster than you and I'm stronger than you and the sidelines is over there. He's going to get to that and he's going to go, damn, I wish I would have known that in college. Nobody would have ever caught a pass on me, right? So that's to me, in a lot of ways, I don't like corners that are finished projects. That was Jeff Okuda. Finished product. Where does it go? He's as perfect as it can get, right? This kid's not perfect, but the explosiveness, the ability, and then, you know, to your point with the off, too, there's some skill to that. Jair Alexander was very much like this because, again, I think it's the instincts to be able to see the field, the ability to read and react in a flash, right? And then they have ball skills. They have real ball skills. Quinyon Mitchell is the rare guy that when you throw a go route down the sideline or something like that, he plays it like a wide receiver. He doesn't go, oh, let me turn into the wide receiver and not see the ball and just wait for the receiver to put his hands up and then I'll try to knock the ball down, right? Mm-hmm. He doesn't do that. I don't know how much you noticed it, but like when people attacked him, he'd be running down the field. He'd be like, I'm going to go get that. I'm going to intercept it, right? I mean, he played it like a wide receiver. And he's got a few drop interceptions or whatever. I'm sure people docked him 74 points because he dropped 2 interceptions, whatever. I saw so many good plays on the ball and so much ball awareness. So even plays where maybe he didn't make the play on the ball, but I went, man, that was an unbelievable like recovery job. And then he was all over that. He just missed it, but he saw it. He knew where the ball was and everything like that. That's to me where I was incredibly impressed by the player.
You want to hear the notes from Ahmed Fried's notebook?
Oh, I know it.
Such a quick decision maker. Comes up, delivers hits, reads well. Knows how to position his body to screen off and get in line with the route.
He
it's
does.
Almost like he knows the route as well as the receiver
right,
knows the route.
Right.
Played off the line a lot, gave him the ability to go right, read the field, go downhill if necessary. Played physical, even in cold weather. They had some cold games there in Toledo, and I think that's important.
Yep.
Plays fast as a tackler. And this is the thing that really stood out, because I looked at all these guys that you sent me, and there are a few plays for every single corner where it's like, oh, that looked terrible. If you just saw that one play, you'd be like, he can't draft that guy.
Right.
It just looks so bad. He basically didn't have any of those plays.
Yeah,
rarely
yeah.
had a play.
He might have had one or two plays where, like, no safety was there. He
yeah.
was flat-footed. The guy, like, kind of ran into him. He had to maybe hold him a little
yeah.
as he went by, right? I mean, those were the negative plays.
Or the plays where he does have the speed to still make up for some of those mistakes.
Yeah, or
like,
he sits.
Wasn't that bad of
right.
a play.
He's going to get burned a few times his rookie year on double moves and stuff because he's so aggressive. Right. Or he's so cocky again. And this is to me where great corners need this. He's so cocky that you know, go ahead. I dare you to run by me. You're not going to run by me. I'm, even if you do, I'm going to run you down. Right.
Yeah.
So he's got a little bit of that in him, too, to where, yeah, you throw a slant. That next one, he's going, well, damn, they're going to throw the curl and slant again. I'm going to wait here. I trust my speed. Right. And those are things you trust. You get a feel for on film, too. You could tell the guys that trust themselves in certain situations, as opposed to the guy who's like, oh shit, I better get out of there because I don't know if I can run with this guy, so I need to backpedal 74 yards down the field. Oh, they caught a slant, but at least they didn't do anything. Well, yeah, okay, they're going to catch slants on you all day long, right? That to me is what I really liked. And yeah, he'll probably have to learn a few lessons here and there, but either way, he is the kind of guy you draft. He's going to give your defense attitude, swagger, just like a Devin Witherspoon. It's going to be that infectious, in-your-face personality that rubs off on a team, let alone he's a shutdown corner.
So I think we have his nonagon, his measurables out there. NFL.com says he's built like a running back, tackles like a safety, has the ball skills of a corner. Here's his nonagon. So it's pretty impressive with the hand size, big. He's fast. 10-yard split's good. 40-yard dash is awesome.
Yep.
He's lacking a little bit in the broad jump. I haven't seen a corner have to broad jump that often. So of yeah. all the traits not to have.
We're not worried about that one.
And arm length. Is he a player? And some of these, you read the reports on the go. They're going to need to be drafted into a specific system.
Yeah. No,
he
would not be my one
system.
If he would be in if that you can't be my one if you're going to be, oh, he can only play zone. Like this. No, this, you know where it starts for me. Zone, he can learn. He's going to learn how to go. They're going to go, hey, when you play cover two, there's a guy in the flat and the guy behind you, midpoint them, all right? And then read the quarterback's eyes. That's, I mean, again, these are things where, like, when I hear, like, all that crap, I want to go, come on, it's just coaching. There's nothing more to it. The hard part is what he does and why we're talking about him, and he does that at a really high level. And yeah, no, he translates to everybody, but I think the teams that play man to man or value that more are of course going to love him even more because they know what he brings to the table.
He was roundly praised as the best corner at the Senior Bowl, projected top 15 picks in most mock drafts right now.
He is a top 6 or 7 pick for sure. If he's on a big-time college football team, like I'm not joking. I think he's a top 5. If he went to LSU and had a yellow helmet, or Ohio State, or Alabama, everybody's going, he's a top 5 pick. But because it's Toledo, and because that name doesn't make people feel warm and cozy,
yeah,
right. And he doesn't have enough of he covered these big-time receivers. It's probably going to hurt him a few spots, which it shouldn't. But. You know, again, like Devin Witherspoon last year, and maybe Pete, you could pull this up. I remember one of the things that, like, he kind of got lucky with the Big Ten schedule. Now, see, he went in the Big Ten, so that makes people feel warm and cozy, and he's from Illinois, and at least that's a name that makes people feel warm and cozy, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if I remember correctly, he kind of went through his. He didn't have to play Ohio State, I know that.
Yeah.
And I feel like he dodged another team,
too. I don't think they played Penn State. They played Michigan.
Right. He kind of dodged, like, the teams where you went, ooh, they got some heat at receiver, and they can be a little, like, we could get a better feel for him.
Yeah.
Right? But either way, I think that's the reality we're living in here.
Other notable recent draft picks from Toledo, you got Deontay Johnson, you have Kareem Hunt.
Yeah.
There's only been one round one pick, Pete notes here, from Toledo. Defensive tackle Dan Williams was taken 11th overall by the 1993 Denver Broncos.
I know.
It's going to happen again this year.
He
will be a first rounder.
Yeah, he will be a first rounder for sure. You know, and yes, he would. I would be absolutely floored, blown away, not the top corner. He's in a tier by himself. And I think And again, I haven't got done with pass rushers and all that yet. I'm in the midst of doing that right now. I would think this kid is in the running for the top defensive player off the board in general.
Hair Club Prez says, is Quinyon Mitchell the next Sauce?
Ooh.
He looks incredible. P.S. Love the pod, and Ahmed reading my question in his elite radio voice is phenomenal. He actually makes it sound interesting. Well, that's what I try to do.
What he's here for. That silky smooth voice.
Hey, interesting
questions. I think he is every bit as good as Sauce. I'm going to say this. I like him better than I like Sauce coming out. You know, Sauce to me, and again, Sauce is not – I don't know if Sauce could just go all over the field and play people man-to-man everywhere, right? Sauce is a little bit of like he's in a system, cover three, press bail, right? That you just play outside, you do that. I love Sauce. I get that. I like him. Don't get me wrong. But I'm more of a fan of Quinyon Mitchell than I was of Sauce Gardner coming out.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
My Detroit Lions could use a guy like that. Unfortunately, they were too good last year.
Unfortunately, he will be off the board unless you guys trade your whole future.
Trade up. So tier one is closed,
Around any corner, within every battle, and with the dawn of each new day, the threat of the unexpected, the unpredictable, and the unrelenting lies in wait. But Marines will always be there. They are the constant in the chaos. No matter the battlefield, Marines adapt to win, defeating every shifting threat, protecting our nation's future. The few, the proud, the Marines.
At Vanguard, you're more than just an investor. You're an owner. That means your priorities are Vanguard's too. So whether you're planning for retirement or trying to save up for your next big adventure, Vanguard will work alongside you to set personalized investment goals. That's the value of ownership. All investing is subject to risk. Vanguard is owned by its funds, which are owned by Vanguard's fund shareholder clients. Vanguard Marketing Corporation Distributor.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
That your
boom.
Shutdown
one.
Corner one is off the board. So now we go into tier two. You got two corners in this tier.
Yeah.
And this one is titled Island Corners. So what can you give me the distinction between shutdown corner one and island corners?
Those are still like these are guys you're gonna trust on an island with your best guys. They might not shut down people quite yet in the NFL, right?
Yeah.
But you're trusting them that, hey, they're not going to be outclassed by anybody we go against, right? Might not be as good as Quinyon Mitchell yet and right that because he's ready to shut down, right? These guys, hey, we're ready to put them on an island. They might not shut them down yet, but we trust them. They're good enough. They're freaky enough. They're explosive enough that we'll put them out there against the best receivers in football on an island by themselves. And they'll work towards being shut down.
Your number two corner in this tier of island corners was nicknamed Nate the Great by his coach Dabo Swinney. Your number two corner is
Nate Wiggins, Clemson. Yeah, I mean, I like Nate. I really do. I mean, it's hard not to like him. First off, I mean, when you're just talking about Nate Wiggins and you talk about corner in general, I mean, speed and length, like we talked about at the start of the show, well, there's Nate Wiggins. He's kind of got both, right? And we like that because, yeah, he's the kind of guy that you could say on the outside and go, well, I think he could run with Tyreek Hill if he runs go routes and does all of that. Right, I like that. Oh, it's a longer Justin Jefferson type of receiver. All right, well, he's got the length and the wingspan there too, where I know he can run with them, but you know he won't be out catch radius by Justin Jefferson and all that. I mean, so that's where I really like Nate Wiggins. He's skinny, right? He's got a Tyson Campbell, Denzel Ward type of look to him, if that makes sense.
6'1", 173.
No doubt about that, right? It's skinny. It's long, right? But it is fast. I mean, it's really fast. The kind of fast that I love where, I mean, he enjoys running people down. right? I mean, he enjoys going, oh, you think you're about to break loose or a 70-yard touchdown? I'm going to show you and tackle you at the 3 or 4 yard line. I mean, that he's got that showmanship about him that you really, really like, right? You know, I mean, like acceleration burst off of the back pedal is really, really damn good, right? He's got a little bit maybe of a straight linerness to him compared to Quinyon Mitchell, right? Not so much to where it's like Emmanuel Forbes from last year, right? But he's long, he's skinny, you know, he's got narrow hips. He might not be quite as hippie as some of the other corners in this draft or whatever else, but it's not to where you go, you know, oh, whoa, it's a problem. His hips are just not as good as, you know, a guy like Quinyon Mitchell or somebody else, right? But, like, that would be one area you'd go, oh, it could be a little bit better. But again, his speed and acceleration are so good that it's not one where you go, oh, okay, just because he's a little hip, a little tight in the hips there, or, you know, he takes a few too many steps in transition, right? He thinks the guy's about to run a go route and the guy puts the brakes on and runs the 15-yard out route or whatever. Does he have a few more steps than you would like? Yeah, sometimes he does, right? But all in all, the straight speed, the length, the ability to break on the ball, the ability to close on the ball even if he's beat and still make it competitive, whether he knocks it down or, hey, the guy catches it but it's a bang-bang type of play, really is pretty damn elite when you get into it.
So one of the things I noted was, much like Mitchell, rarely looks bad. And so here's another guy. Like you said, maybe not as clean or doesn't look as clean in
right,
doing it,
right.
But doesn't look flat out bad because he's got the speed to make up for
exactly
his mistakes.
Right.
And he's got the want to. And the some of those plays that you mentioned stood out. The 80-yard run, I think it was by Miami, where he comes and strips the ball at the 1 yard line.
Insane.
It was cool. He did that a couple
of times.
The first
plays I ever saw of him. Right, right. Yeah, he did. What was the other one? I can't even remember the other one.
I think it was the UNC game. Oh, UNC.
UNC,
it was Miami, and then he almost did the same thing. Almost, I think he scored, but it was just like he almost tried to rip the ball out right at the 1 yard line again.
Yeah, he's got next level, next gear type of speed.
So
right?
I got a question here from AddyM27. Hey Sims, love the pod. Is it just me, or is Wiggins the only corner out of the consensus that plays man to man on a consistent down to down basis? Seems to like a CB1 to me.
He definitely is a CB1. That's why I love Clemson, and they don't make it hard. And they give you the context clues, like I talk about. Like, oh, it's a big down. What are they going to play? Oh, they trust their guy man-to-man on their best receiver. Okay, there he goes. So he does it. Yeah, he has that. Him and Quinyon Mitchell are definitely right up there with him. There's one other guy we're going to talk about here in a little bit, too, that plays a good amount of man-to-man. You know, maybe not to this degree. But, yeah, he's CB1, plays a ton of man, can play off. Right, probably more comfortable playing bump, though. That's where he's really good, right? And then he's still doesn't even use his hands to probably his capacity. That's another thing he'll learn in the NFL to give himself an advantage. But his ability, like, you know, to turn and straight run is really good. Let's say you run a post and then a corner, right? It might not be perfectly greasy within the hips, but it's not bad. And then, like I said, he makes it up with it with having another gear and speed. But, you know, a little like Quinyon Mitchell, too, is he can play the ball a little. This is another reason where, you know, I made him number two. Not only the speed and the length, right, does a great job of, like, if you outside release, he's not going to let you buy him, and he's going to get on top of you and then basically squash the route. But he does play the ball like a receiver a little bit himself, too. He's not looking to always go into the DB or the wide receiver and knock the ball out that way. And he's scary. He's not afraid to take a chance. You know, like Quinyon Mitchell, he plays off and he thinks he knows what you're about to throw. You know, he puts the foot on the ground and then he just takes off and you go, whoa, right? I mean, their ability to break on the ball on routes where, like you said, the quarterback goes, oh, I think I got an easy one here. He's 7 yards off and I'm running and throwing an underneath route. And these guys throw the ball and it's like, whoa, you just got that in there, right? That's where he's damn special too. But yeah, you get to see him play man-to-man and be on that island, and he answers a lot of questions in that style of play.
So he's grown too, it seems like. When he was at Clemson, he originally committed to LSU, switched over to Clemson his freshman year. Dabo said he had an immature year, missed some classes doing stuff like that. But in 2022, or 2022 as some people say, as a sophomore, became the full-time starter, had a pick six in the ACC championship game then. Dabo said that he matured, got more focused, and so that translated onto the field too. His size, you already mentioned it one time here. I did. That was the negative. Like, his bad plays are, you know, I don't know that he is a willing participant in the run game situation sometimes.
He's got a little bit of that, right?
No Comes doubt. In flying wildly, hoping to, like, bring him down, but doesn't really want to deliver a
yeah,
giant
wants,
hit.
Yeah, wants you to trip over him as he flies in, and he's hoping he just takes your legs out.
So got a question here from Vishnu Treasurer. Says, Nate Wiggins' weight will be questioned, but we saw him match up against bigger receivers like Xavier Leggett and hold his own. How much will his 185-pound frame, which is actually 173 at the combine, really affect his game at the next level?
Yeah, it's going to a little. Like, he's going to lose some bump and grind in plays, right? Like, you know, T. Higgins going down the sideline and he's got to cover his Clemson alumni right there. You know, like little elbow shrugs and arm shrugs. Like, yeah, T. Higgins is going to win that physical battle. That's part of it.
Second percentile
in weight.
But
there's some dog in this kid.
Yeah.
You know, that's he
for sure.
He will compete, right? And, you know, he's not a killer in the tackling game. But, again, to me, where I evaluate that a little different, Quinyon Mitchell's ability to tackle is special for a corner. You don't see guys like him or Devin Witherspoon very often to where you're just like, wow, not only are they freaky athletic cover guys, they have no regard for their body, right? Yeah, this guy, he'd rather tackle you on the side, run you down, or come in, like I said, and hope he takes your legs out. But he's like, is he going to square you up and be like, come on, tailback, bring it on. I'm going to square you up and take you on in the D-gap, right?
Which is smart.
Right.
He probably should not do that.
He doesn't want to do that. And that's not what he's being drafted for.
So
he's being drafted for so he can cover Devontae Smith, who runs 4.3 down the sideline, and you can go, well, we feel comfortable because we have a guy running 4.2 down the sideline right there with him, and he's just as long and can jump with him and do all that stuff as well.
Do you want to hear what an anonymous NFL source has to say from NFL.com? This is an NFL national scout.
Yeah.
He has better physical talent than Devin Witherspoon, but he doesn't have that same level of dog in him. That's probably the biggest difference right now. I think Wiggins is the better prospect, though.
Well, I know what he's saying there.
You wouldn't go that far.
I wouldn't go that far, but I think I know his point there, right? You know, there's again, when you talk about outside corner play, there's valued more in the NFL than the guys who are being paid the most at corner in football are not playing in the slot. They're outside having to play the freaks out there. So, you know, there's value into that where Witherspoon is a little bit more of the nickel. And, yeah, I think, like, listen, Wiggins has a – like, Witherspoon was just pedal to the metal, needle on red all the time, right? Wiggins has a few plays where, you know, you go, you shouldn't let that guy catch that route on you right there, right? Where he might be, I don't want to say lazy or just, you know, a little lethargical or, you know, just complacent at times. Maybe that to a degree, but like not concerning.
Yeah.
It wasn't like I was watching Stingley and that or anything like that, right? There's just a few plays where you're like, oh, yeah, they threw a 10-yard out, and damn, that guy can't shine your shoes. You shouldn't be letting him catch the ball that easily.
It's more of a commentary on Devin Witherspoon, really.
I mean,
it's like
so.
No one can go to that level of dogging him that he showed last year on tape.
Right. And he's long, he flies, he knows how to play the game, he can play on an island, he's got ball skills, right? Doesn't know how to use his hands, he's raw degree in that department, right? But his makeup ability and his six gear is special. The ability to close on the receiver is special, right? And he can play zone. He's got instincts. He's not like, oh, I can just play man-to-man and I don't understand the game either. There is plenty of plays where I go, oh, they did a good job there. Ooh, you know, he read number two and came off the guy outside and saw that and went and made a play on it. So there's a lot there to the player to really respect.
I think, in my humble opinion, those two guys stood out.
They stood out.
Wiggins and Mitchell. But you also have another guy in tier two.
I do.
Island corner. You're not necessarily in the consensus on this one, although many people like the traits of this corner.
Right.
Would not necessarily put him in this tier. You like him better than most.
Yeah.
He's from Auburn. His name is?
DJ James. Yeah, I like DJ James, right? DJ James, now, unlike... like Quinyon Mitchell can cover anybody anywhere, right? Okay. Wiggins is an outside corner who has to maybe learn some technique and stuff and could probably play some slot as he goes on in his career, right? DJ James, to me, not only is outside, you know, man-to-man corner and does all that stuff too. DJ James has the hips and the change of direction skills where I go, I have no doubt he could play nickel right away in the NFL and be really elite at it as well, right? That to me is where he's really special. He doesn't quite have the speed the other guys do, right? To where on the outside of Jamar Chase is running by him, he's not going to close down on him like Nate Wiggins or Quinion Mitchell are going to be able to, right? They can say, go, gadget, six gear, and then they can go, wait, I could stay with Jamar Chase, right? DJ James, he doesn't have that. But what DJ James does have, and I think is every bit as good, or maybe even better than Nate Wiggins, right, is, hey, I'm running with a guy, and he's kind of running like the post route, and all of a sudden now he breaks and runs to the corner, like we were talking about, like the post corner. His hips and ability to move and change directions, they're better than Nate Wiggins, that's for sure. He has got the loosest hips, change of direction, put your foot in the ground, no wasted steps. I'm breaking here, and I'm back to full speed within two steps. He is up there with Quinion Mitchell in that department. Mm. Now, he's not as good as either one of them at ball skills, and, of course, he doesn't have the size and length maybe as the other two that way. But I was really impressed with this player, just about everything with this player. Great feet, right? Really competes, gets in your face. His only thing was maybe that lack of top-end gear that the other two guys have that he's kind of missing.
No, Malik Nabers was your man crush and wide receiver.
Yeah.
And PFF notes that he is one of the few players, DJ James, who handled Malik Nabers' quickness in that game.
And
that's
my
probably
point.
One of the
that's
games
my
that you,
point I'm talking
you
about,
watched
though.
There. Yeah. NFL.com said, quote, a thin frame combined with questionable long speed could push James inside, where his pattern matching and short area athleticism yeah. should work to his advantage. So
right.
similar to what you're saying right there. Yeah. It's like he has the speed, but necessarily all the way down the field. You wonder about that.
Yeah,
quick,
that's
for sure,
what you were,
in
yes,
tight quarters.
Exactly right, right. You're comfortable with really with anything like 20 to 25 yards, right? Anything underneath that, you're great. But, yeah, when it gets to, oh, no, he was kind of sitting on the underneath route, right, and the guy takes off and runs deep, right, there's not the same type of top end, ooh, let me get to that other gear to close it. The ball's in the air. Oh, he's closing it. Like Nate Wiggins and Mitchell, you'd be like, I don't know if the ball's going to get there in time, right? And, you know, this one, okay, it's not quite that way. But where it's a little different is on some of the intricate underneath routes, like I said, as compared to a Nate Wiggins or whatever, he's all over that stuff. You try to run a little, like, slant and then come back out. Right? All that. Or a little jerk route in the middle of the field. He is very good at, oh, wait, you made me stop? Oh, no, you leaned me this way. Oh, my hips are good. I'm going back the other way with you. Or, you know, you flip me around, but I'm not like a robot that's like, wait, I have to redirect to a straight line. I'm going straight now. Here I go. It's none of that. It's a really loose point guard-ish and basketball, right? That's where I liked him. And to me, that's where, like, his hips... his ability to turn and run, his ability to flip his hips and turn and run, it's excellent, right? The footwork, everything we talked about, whether it's back pedals, right, being leaned one way, having to stick the foot in the ground and break another way, it's all, like, he's elite in those areas. He really is. It's just that one area we talk about. And tackling, you know, it's a little like Nate Wiggins. He tackles, but he's not going to set the edge. We're not asking him to take on Jerome Bettis. That's not what he is.
Right.
You know, he's just going to do enough and get you down, and that's what he's going to do there.
He's 6 foot, 175,
exactly.
So he's not the biggest
guy. He's not going to kill you that way, right?
I noticed that, too. In run defense, I had an oh-no play. He had the Barry Sanders play. Remember that play against the Patriots that one time where Barry is, like, turning?
Oh, weaving around,
which
yeah.
Was Harlan Barnett,
actually. Against the Cowboys.
No, it was the Patriots.
No, don't you ask me. You're going to question me.
Was
it's
it?
The Cowboys in the playoff game. It was Ken Norton
Jr.
No.
It was the one with Harlan Barnett. We're talking about different
talking
plays.
Talking about
probably.
Different plays. Okay,
where
okay.
He kind of like turns one way, and then like the corner goes back the other. Maybe, I mean, Barry
right.
was great. He
yeah,
probably
he
did it multiple times.
A lot. Yeah, right,
we
right.
did have a DJ James play like that against yeah. Texas A&M in the 79-yard touchdown run. I was like, that sucks.
Yeah.
And it does seem like when I was watching, I was like, man, his toughest games were against the best competition, which makes
yeah,
sense.
Yeah, they played man. I
which
mean,
makes sense,
yes,
right?
Right. Right.
So they context clues. It was like they trusted him in those situations. It was hard for him, but they did trust him in those.
They did.
They
when they had a big play against, you know, to your point, to LSU, they went, you take Malik Nabers, right? You take him.
Yeah.
I mean, that to me said a lot. And it was sometimes moved into the slot where you're like, wow, he's been playing outside for like the last 20 snaps. Now here we are in a 3rd-and-7. They went, go inside against the best receiver in college football. right? And he was definitely not outclassed in those departments. But finish off what you're going
to
keep saying.
But to the point
there.
I was making about your first two guys, it's like you really couldn't find any bad play. There were some for DJ James.
There
and
is.
Also, I was like wondering, should it be disqualifying? He was the one in coverage that gave up that 4th and 31 game-winning touchdown.
He
to
only
Alabama.
Covered the guy perfectly for 35 fucking seconds, right? Did. That's where I feel bad for guys, like the corner. He's all over the guy forever. Yeah. The guy's forever.
Yeah.
And then he's got his back turned to the ball, and Milroe threw a good ball, but yeah, that hurt. I'm sure.
I think it was indicative of maybe some of his ball skills sometimes, a lack of awareness, sometimes getting lost in zone two, and so I think that showed up a couple of times, but the elite physical traits is what puts him number three on your list.
Number three. And then the first guy that I say has got real inside-outside day one, you know, availability to a football team. I wouldn't be shy. That's probably where he starts out. I wouldn't be shocked if that's where it started. But again, I think there's enough on the outside. And I think between the feet and the transition and all of that, the burst, right, the acceleration, I see a corner here that end of the first, maybe early second.
So he's
right,
projected round three
He's right in round three mock draft. Yeah,
so.
PETA told me before, he's like, PETA told me round two.
Yeah.
He saw a little bit. But I'd
be
shocked if he doesn't raise up here a little bit as we go too.
Right.
Because it's one of those where you're not projecting much. You get to see it. You get to see him play man against big-time competition, and you get to see him against guys like the two LSU guys and go, well, he wasn't outclassed by any stretch of the imagination against those two guys, so I think he'll be okay in the NFL.
Yeah, the fact that he just could do that, keep up with Malik Nabers in that one game, should be enough for some NFL team to pull the trigger, which they will. Which round, that is still the question.
Vanguard is working hard to balance opportunity and risk for investors in this time of volatile yields. We know financial advisors are working hard to do the same. Visit vanguard.com/fixed income today. Important information. All investing is subject to risk, including the possible loss of the money you invest. Bond funds are subject to the risk that an issuer will fail to make payments on time and that bond prices will decline because of rising interest rates or negative perceptions of an issuer's ability to make payments. Vanguard Marketing Corporation, distributor.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We close the door on tier number two. We go to tier number three, and this is your final tier. You have your final two players in tier number three, and this is raw and explosive. Can you give me just what does that encapsulate?
Raw, explosive. You know, it's
self-explanatory.
Like, well, it is self-explanatory. Like, not perfect. They're not finished products by any stretch of the imagination. But the clay, the moldable clay you see there, you go, ooh, there's some stuff here that I like, right? Mm-hmm. You know, it might not be. Hey, it might be a few too many steps here and there. It might be, oh, why did you not play with this leverage? Why did you flip your hips, do all that type of stuff, right? But still, you look at it and you go, man, at the end of the day, you can look at these guys and go, you got him, and we're going to be okay. And that's what it is. And then there's some things maybe that they need to clean up, or we can poke holes about their game as they go forward that they need to get better at.
Your number four corner in the 2024 draft class is?
It is Max Melton from Rutgers, right? Who the hell thought I'd be saying that right there?
Devin's going to love this.
Yes.
Devin McCourty, famed Rutgers corner.
Yep. He 5'11". Looks bigger than 5'11 on the field, right? He's one of those now, like, pretty long arms. You know, arms are up the length of the guys that are taller than him. So those are things that I look at and I go, oh, he plays bigger than his size, right? And here's a guy that I think ultimately, you know, he's an outside corner. But this is a guy that I think, as his career goes on, I wouldn't be shocked to see him, you know, get to play the slot a little bit too. I think it's there within him, all right? And where he's might not be as good as James with a change of direction and the hips and all that type of stuff, his straight speed is better than a DJ James, right? His straight speed is better than a DJ James. His ability to accelerate and get to top end speed is better than our guy at Clemson, too. Like, he can get to 0 to 60. Nate Wiggins, it might take him 5 steps to get to 0 to 60. Guys like Max Melton and DJ James, it's like 2 steps and they get to full speed, let alone he's got another gear than even a DJ James has, right? Tackles does that. But, again, context clues. Greg Schiano, pretty damn good coach. Big plays. He's playing man inside or outside. Does both, right? Right, has really good feet, right? Not like DJ James or maybe Quinyon Mitchell, but they're really good. And then again, the burst, which is such a huge part of this, right? I'm sitting flat footed, the guy runs the out route right in front of me. The ability to burst and maybe make a competitive play on the ball there. Or, oh wait, he's attacking me and I'm backpedaling. Let me jam my right foot in the ground now because he's breaking on an in cut or an out cut, whatever. His ability to do that, I mean, it's up there with anybody in the draft as far as that's concerned, right? So burst, acceleration, all of that. I love that, right? He's put in a lot of tough man-to-man situation, right? And he has some plays, as we talked about with the last guy. You go, yeah, he gets beat. It doesn't look very good. But when I watch them, I go, most of the corners in the NFL would be beat on these kind of plays too if they were asked to play the coverage this way and what they're doing against this route. That's a tough one. So, you know, that's where I like him. He's not as technically sound as maybe the other guys, and that's where he is raw but explosive, right?
Yeah.
Right? You know, but the raw ability is there. You know, the patience at the line of scrimmage, he's confident in his like ability to run and do that, right? But he guesses a little bit every now and then. He takes a few extra steps or a weird step every now and then, right? But all in all, again, I think he's a guy that you're going to trust on an island, and he's got elite speed and acceleration along with some good feet and some just needing some more coaching to where this guy gets that, he could be one of the top corners in football in a few years.
Turns 22 in April, yeah, 5'11", 187, four-year starter at Rutgers, part of a family, an athletic family. His brother, Packers wide receiver Bo Melton,
right.
Father played wide receiver and corner at Rutgers. Mother played basketball at Rutgers. He's from Mays Landing, New Jersey. Yeah. This is why you like this guy. He's a New Jersey guy.
You know that. He's got Jersey toughness.
Jersey toughness.
But his ability with their Wiggins and their Quinn Mitchell, to me, to run people down when he had been beaten, like the top end stuff, like, oh no, he thought the guy was going to run a slant and the guy ran by and ran a go.
Yeah.
His ability to turn and go, whoa, like he was beat and he knocked that ball down. Or the guy caught it, but you're still like, holy shit, the fact that he even made that a fucking competitive play was impressive. To me, that was up there with the top guys in the draft. It was better than DJ James at Auburn, right? It was up there with Wiggins and Mitchell, I thought, as far as that department's concerned.
Which gives him the ability to take more chances.
Exactly
on the
right.
Field too.
Be patient. Right. Exactly right.
The Ahmed Fried film notes.
Yeah.
Definite makeup speed.
Yeah.
So there you go. Great hands, ball skills, knack for jumping routes for sure. A lot of his good plays are in run support as well, which is a good sign for a guy with speed, and you know who can cover.
Right.
I go his negative here. Definitely committed his share of penalties, had some holds.
Definitely.
I don't know if that was a function, and we talked about this.
Yeah.
The Big Ten officiating compared to the SEC officiating, he definitely was handsy and pulled and committed some of those penalties, but I don't know if those Big Ten officials look for that more than other officials
no,
do out there.
Yeah, no. Well, they all hold a little too much.
Right.
They're all going to get
if you get away with it, why
day
not?
Of reckoning in the NFL, and they're going to go, what?
Yeah.
They're calling that on me? That would have never been called pass interference in college, right? So they're going to have to adjust. But, hey, first off, look at the body. The legs are great. It's a high ass.
Mm.
You know I'm a fan of a high ass,
big
right?
Deal.
It is. You know, he's high cut, and he makes a lot of plays on the ball. And he ain't afraid to go in there and throw the ball around. I mean, throw his body around a little bit and do that too. That's what I do like about him, right? You know, the what else did I want to say? The speed, the transition, I got that. Oh, you know, one of the other things, too, that just jumps out to me is, you know, teams went away from him, I felt like, more times than not. Like, if you had, like, oh, wait, I have good receiver over here and not so as good a receiver over here, and they're both running the same route, they went, I'm going to play my lesser receiver because I don't think we're going to be able to get open against this guy over here. Those are some other things that, you know, I thought were you know, pretty telltale signs of, like, the respect the other teams gave him, the respect his own defense had in him to go, hey, you got to cover this guy man-to-man. Yeah, there's some stuff to this guy. I really like him, right? And, you know, there was parts of me that was like, maybe should I put him in the tier two, right? I was like, I don't know, maybe I should put him, because there's some raw ability stuff, like I said, that I think is in the class of the Auburn and Clemson kid, right? You know, but there's some stuff there that does need some work, and that's where I think ultimately I just felt a little more comfortable with the other guys.
Okay, all right. Yeah. I'm sold, number four, but I do want to look at the nonagon. I do want to look at the nonagon before we move on. So we got to look at his measurables here. And so as you can see, 40-yard dash, vertical jump, 10-yard split, awesome. Arm length, pretty good here for a guy who's not necessarily that tall. So the weight is the big concern, but just eat some pizzas. Okay, I'm sold on the nonagon.
Yeah,
I think it's
the weight
good
and the height.
Measurable.
It's just, and, you know, to me, the 5'11 thing, yeah, probably hurt him, you know, again. But I do think this is a second-round pick. Right, I wouldn't be shocked. Like, again, I'm not mad if guys like him or DJ James, and we've seen this before. Yeah. I can honestly tell you, I've seen corners worse than these guys picked in the late in the first round. That's for sure. That's what I will not. Hmm. And that's to me. And again, I don't have a great feel for tackle or pass rusher yet, you know, to where maybe I'm undervaluing these guys. And we've seen, you know, once maybe the first two DBs go off the boards, teams start to go, oh, shit, there's only a few more true island corners out there. And then we'll see a run of them, right? We've seen that in the years past, too, where, like, oh, a corner gets drafted at 8, corner gets drafted at 14, and all of a sudden teams are, like, in the 20s, and they're going, oh, shit. And we see 3 or 4 corners go, and the 5 corners in the 20s go, right? So that you know, this kind of guy – you know, I wrote 30 to 50, right, as my general range there. And I don't expect it to be first round, but I don't expect them to be on the board long in the second round before somebody takes them.
Projected round 2 pick right now in the mock drafts. Your number 5 corner, who is also in the raw and explosive category. And this is another one that not necessarily in the consensus.
I know I'm not in the consensus here.
Even more so, you're not in the consensus here.
This is
a love for Chris Sims that we have not seen reflected elsewhere. We're going to learn something here. Your number 5 corner is?
DeCamrion Richardson.
So you're out of whack on consensus, and we said his first name with a question mark at the end. This is not good.
Was put there by Pete, and I practiced before we start the show, and I still messed it up. My bad, DeCamrion.
Your number 5 corner is?
DeCamrion Richardson, yes. Number 3 from Mississippi State. Is Mississippi State, is it just a guarantee that they're going to have a freak or two in every draft?
And they have to.
I mean, it just kind of seems like it. No matter what. I mean, it's just like, oh, it's the draft. It's like, does Mississippi State have a freak corner? Do they have a freak offensive lineman? Do they have some freak defensive tackle that's just going to maul the NFL? What will it be? That's Mississippi State. I mean, every year. I mean, we're talking all tall length here. We're talking Sauce Gardner-ish type of looking body, right? Where it's skinny and, you know, borderline frail to a degree. Right? But he ain't frail with how he plays, right? For frail, nobody told him he's skinny because he does bring it. I mean, maybe out of some of the other corners, maybe brings it as good as anybody that way.
6'2", 188, right. So he is like 10 pounds heavier than some of the other corners we've already had here. His numbers at the combine, 4.34, 40-yard dash, a 1.48, 10-yard split. And so we'll already do the, what do we got here for him? It's also a nonagon. They're all nonagons here. So, yeah, 95th percentile in the 40-yard dash, 92nd percentile in the 10-yard split. And so those things just jump right out at you,
they
first of all.
Jump right out, right? And I think then you couple that where, hey, like, you couple that with the straight speed, the size and the length, and the ability to jam at the line of scrimmage and make people very uncomfortable there, right? That's to me where he's got a little bit of like a Richard Sherman, Brandon Browner-ish type of aspect to him, right? He's not going to be everybody's cup of tea. Right, if you're looking for a guy that's just going to be like man-to-man all over the field on intricate routes, a little again, some of the change of direction, like Emmanuel Forbes from Mississippi last year, you know, there's some things there that you'd like better, like you wish it was a little bit better. But I actually think some of that stuff's better than Emmanuel Forbes, right? I really do. And then I think when you couple that with the physicality, and then again, right, the physicality, the length, the speed, the top end speed. And, like, 0 to 60 in one step. Again, like I said, the hips, the change of direction, I wish it was a little bit better. But when you talk about jam and turn and run, or I'm in a back pedal and the guy in front of me now has put the brakes on and I have to put my foot in the ground and accelerate, it's as good as anybody in the draft, is that that department. I mean, he can really stick his foot in the ground, and he can really go gadget legs and get up to top speed in a hurry. That's where I like it, right? He's going to be a little bit more of, hey, we're looking for an outside corner that can play bigger receivers. Seattle three teams might really like him. Right? Because I do, like I just said to Richard Sherman and Brandon Browner, you know, jam with the line of scrimmage, get back, don't let them run by you, right? If they're underneath you, put your foot in the ground, accelerate on the ball, right? That's to me where he flourishes. And then he's not afraid, like I said, to mix it up and do that, right? But he's best when he's playing bump and run. And it's odd because he can flip his hips and turn and run straight away. But if it's more of a intricate double move route or anything like that, that's where, again, he's not perfect that way. And he needs some work and definitely can work in that department.
That's what I noted. I go, there are times he can definitely look clunky and out of control.
Exactly right.
Right? And
exactly
so you see those plays and you're like, all right, I see why he's way down in the list. But you think... And this is one of those players where there probably is a scheme fit for him.
I think
right?
so. I think, well, he's a guy where you go, he's total outside corner. We're never bringing him inside, right? It's almost like, you know, like I said, Seattle 3, like a Sauce Gardner or something like that. Yeah. Or a team that goes, we're looking for a bigger, like, he can cover the X receiver kind of guy, right? The single receiver over here. And we can basically say, hey, play inside leverage. Don't run anybody run a slant. Jam the shit out of them and see if they can run around you and your length and your speed on the outside and just make life horrible on that way, right? Right. That, to me, is where he'll be looked at, right? It's going to be that type of thing. You don't want him covering your Z receiver, right? You don't want him versus Malik Nabers, and now Malik Nabers is going in motion, and he might run the shallow cross. He might come out. He might run the D. Like, no way. He'll get crossed up that way, right? And again, guys like Sauce Gardner aren't that good at that stuff either, right? I mean, if he was that great at it, they'd be like, hey, do that all the time. But they keep him on the outside mostly always all game long because that's not his cup of tea. So that's what he's not going to be about. But I will say this too, and even in he's really good in zones because of his length and his short area burst that he has, right? So, oh, wait, he's long. He's midpointing the guy. Hey, it's scary to throw around him. And then you throw balls that are, like, somewhat close. His ability to, you know, get there in two or three steps in the zone coverages, it makes it really dicey and interesting. I think he's one that, again, I don't think, I know. It just as we go here, I'll be shocked if we don't hear this one kind of climb up the ranks. I'm not saying maybe I have him too high, but I think at least you're going to start to hear people go, wait, this guy's, you know, one of my top 50 players now, or I'm hearing he could go in the second round or whatever. That's what I kind of envision happening with D. Camryon Richardson.
We got to get his name first, and then his name will start going off draft boards. He led all SEC corners in tackles each of the last two seasons.
Yeah.
79 in 2023. He had 85 back 2 years ago, but he had zero interceptions in college, which is not always indicative of a guy who can't do that, but it is something that does stand out here. NFL.com says he is leggy with below-average lateral transitions, which is what you said, and change of direction in space, does have big makeup gear in straight line.
That's right, yep. That's to me where it's going to be, right? And he can play off, too, because of the things we talked about, right? It's like Quinyon Mitchell. His ability to kind of, like, see, he's got some instincts, but his ability to go oh, wait, they're running the slant route? Let me go drive on it? I mean, because he can accelerate at such a level, he's very competitive on those type of plays, right? That's where you really like it. He can play off, he can play bump, and, you know, the name I always use when I talk about, like, these bigger guys and all of that, right, is, like, you know, he's the perfect guy. You'd go, hey, T. Higgins is over there. Go guard T. You're long enough. You can run with him, right? Stay with him. Make life hard him that way. That's where he's going to have value to certain teams that are looking for the bigger type of corner, right? That maybe they, all right, we got everything else a corner. We need that guy that we can feel like can match up with some of the longer, straight line, faster guys in football. That's where he's going to come in really handy.
Pete wants to know the difference between him and Emmanuel Forbes, who also went to Mississippi State, was the 16th overall pick last year in the draft.
No, I think he's a little bit better with the change of direction stuff. I definitely think he's stronger and, like, has a better ability to play bump man-to-man.
You like him more than Forbes, a first-rounder last year.
I do, yeah. I was not a fan of Forbes.
You were not.
And we'll see where that goes. But, yeah, that to me last year was so straight-liney, and I went – I don't trust him on any route other than a go route. And this kid, I have more trust for that, let alone, I think the physicalness, I really liked him. He's got a little chippiness, a little attitude to him. You could see the game's important to him. He really competes, right? That's what I really liked about him, too. I think he's going to fit nicely in the NFL.
So that is it. Your top five corners is done. It is in the books. We split it up into three tiers. Here they are. Shut down corner one, Quinyon Mitchell. And then you got the island corners and Nate Wiggins, DJ James. All on the lighter side. I feel like we have more lighter corners here. We told Max to eat some pizza, but Pete notes that that's a worrying thing because he's in New Jersey. He probably did have a lot of pizza. So maybe this is the Max.
He might be maxed out.
Max Melton. As we look at this, and we'll get to the names, I'm sure there for people that follow it, there are a couple names that are lacking on the list right now that are standing out.
Sure.
But would this indicate to you, and I think we heard a lot, that there are a lot of corners, teams that, you know, I don't know, five could go off the board in the first round. I don't know what it is right now.
Right.
Is it not as deep as I had been led to believe a few weeks ago?
It's not as deep as the high-end talent that I guess I was expecting, right? That's what I would say. If I had to say anything, to me, like, you know, there's this group here. We're going to name another two or three guys with Robin Hood. But I felt like there was significant tears or significant drop-off pretty fast, right? Where, again, there's a lot of good. There's a lot of mid to late round corners where I look at. I guess I was kind of expecting a little bit more of a top heaviness, right? Mm-hmm. And a little bit of like, gosh, there's like eight freaks here. I don't know which one to go with, man. This is a tough one. Like, this one was not all that tough. After I watched on film, you know, I always keep a little rough list as I go along. Even in my notes, I go, ooh, I like this guy better than I like that guy, whatever. I always kind of keep that. When I got done watching the DBs, I was kind of like, there's six that I know right away. Like, I don't have to go flipping through my pages and go, oh, let me nitpick over 4 and 7 and 3 and 6. You know what I mean?
Sure.
I knew right away. I was like, there's kind of 5 or 6 that kind of stand above the rest. And then there's a group that I go, I like. They're going to be good in the NFL, but they're not worthy of top 5 or top 40 pick in the draft consideration, in my opinion.
Yeah, so you do this in alphabetical order too. So you probably got to Wiggins. You're like, all right, finally another top corner in this draft class. So let's do the Robin Hoods here real fast, and then I know we got a question here from one of the homies. We'll get to in a second. And your Robin Hood's got one of my favorite guys because I'm a Michigan fan. I'm a homer, Mikey Sainristil. We'll get to him in a second.
Yeah.
Because I think I want to start with Tarion Arnold and Kool-Aid McKinstry. The people that were watching were waiting. Where are the Alabama guys?
Yeah, right.
They go, where are the Alabama guys? Here, because depending on who you look at out there, Tarion Arnold might be some people's number one corner in the class.
Yeah.
So let's go to both of those guys, but let's start with – you want to start with Arnold here? Because I think it was Kool-Aid that got all the hype coming into the year. And then it seems like right now that Tarion is getting the hype as a possible top corner off the board.
They're both really good players, right? They're really good players. There's not a lot of weakness to either one of them, right? They kind of do everything well. But I'd also say there's nothing elite that either one does either, right? That's the big problem. That to me, right? And here's, like, we talk about context clues a little bit, right? Nick Saban likes to play man-to-man. Like, when he has Patrick Surtain and those kind of corners, it's, like, in-your-face man-to-man a ton. He didn't want to play man-to-man with this group right here. They're not man-to-man type of corners. Mm. Nor do I don't think Terrion or Kool-Aid are really guys that you can trust on the outside on a consistent basis. I think they're both nickel corners. They're quicker than fast. Their change of direction skills are better than their ability to turn and run with the elite guys.
Yeah.
Right? That's the biggest problem. Terrion Arnold, you know, he tackles, right? He's got great technique. He's smart as hell. He's instinctive. He plays hard, right? I want him on my defense. I get it. But I don't want to take him as one of the top two or three corners off the board. Definitely not. Definitely not. He is not a guy that you're going to be able to, again, trust as a first-round corner. And when I think about that, I want to go, wait, my first-round corner can play anybody. It doesn't matter who it is. We're playing Amon-Ra St. Brown, you can cover him. We're playing Brandon Ayuk, you can cover him, right? Hey, we're playing Justin Jefferson, you can cover him, right? That, to me, is a first-round corner. Terrion Arnold is nickel only, let alone there is no way you can trust him on the outside versus the NFL elite. Hmm. There's just no way. Right?
Not enough speed?
There's just not enough speed. Exactly right. And even, like, the acceleration number is not bad, right, with the 1.54 and the 40, right? But, you know, on the film, it kind of looks like that as well, if not even a little less than that. But certainly not the same acceleration as some of the top guys in the draft that we just talked about. Definitely not the same class of top-end speed of the guys we just talked about. And that ultimately is, to me, why he's not in my top five. But I think a really good player, and wouldn't be shocked if he's starting somewhere next year. But I think he is a true nickel guy only.
Mm-hmm.
Now, go ahead. What else
do
you want to say?
The LSU game, you watch that because you want to see how they stack up against those studs. Definitely gave him quite a bit of room to operate, those wide receivers.
Yes.
And you did see that at times when it almost looked like, you're right, he didn't trust his own speed because he gave a pretty big cushion. And you'd see some crossing routes and where it's just like he's given a pretty big cushion trying to work the angle because I don't think he thought that he had the speed to run with him.
Exactly right. I think that's basically what it is, right? And, you know, again, there's, you know, like I said, one of the things right away, I just go, is he fast enough to play outside, right? Nothing really pops as far as explosiveness. You see zone. You see he's got good instincts. He understands route recognition, right? He's got very good eyes watching the quarterback drop and understanding, ooh, he took this drop. I'm getting ready for this route, whatever, right? He's tough. He tackles. He has very good hips. I mean, very good. Right, he's the kind of guy like, oh, he's playing the slot receiver. The slot receiver releases vertically. He's running with him, you know, on the inside way. Now the guy cuts underneath him to run the in cut, and he can open up his hips and turn and run that way. And that stuff's great. All that stuff is really good. But it's against the NFL elite explosiveness that, you know, I would really worry about at the end of the day. I think that's the big thing that's going to be total slot corner. No way I trust him on the outside. He tackles. He is smart. Knows D, knows where the help is, knows the O, what they're trying to do, right? I wrote, if he's a top corner, Bama would have played a lot more man coverage. I know that, right? And then I wrote, and to your point, one of the last things I wrote is the LSU wide receivers were on another level than him athletically.
Yeah, right. that did stand out.
Yeah,
I do want to thank him, though,
for
rolling off of Blake Corum, that spin move in overtime in the Rose Bowl game. So I do want to thank him
for
that.
Kick him while he's down.
And
also
Kool-Aid McKinstry also had an opportunity to tackle Blake Corum on that play.
Oh, kick another guy while he's down.
So I do want to appreciate both of these guys for what they did in that game, or did not do. Kool-Aid. Kool-Aid. Well, actually, when I looked at it, I was like, I might actually like Kool-Aid a little bit more than Terrion Arnold.
100%. Thank you for saying that. I'm with you there all
the
way.
Which is weird because it's flipped. You know, it's like he was the guy that had all the hype.
Right.
And what? Isn't Kool-Aid, didn't he have a Liz Frank injury? Jones fracture.
It's Jones fracture, I think, now that he
was playing
with surgery on it.
Right?
Yeah, he just ran his 40 time, right, at his pro day.
So I thought he looked good in, even with that injury.
I like him better than Terrion Arnold too, right? I think he's stronger, right? He's a little thicker looking, and honestly, I thought his change of direction and like burst were just a little bit better than what I saw from Terrion Arnold, right? Now the same thing. I don't know if he can play outside on a consistent basis. I know strength wise and all that, he's going to be really good, right? You know, like I said, the ability to change direction. You know, I thought that was right up there with some of the best players in this draft. Got a body, I wrote, that's a lot like Xavier Howard, right? He's got incredible patience at the line of scrimmage. He always keeps himself in good positions according to the coverage and the formation, right? Movement, strength, acceleration. I like all of this. It's just the top end speed I wasn't sure about, right? Looks and plays so much bigger than the other corner, Arnold, what I wrote too. Right, he tackles. He's tough. Right, he's a slot guy, best in slot. Top end gear is missing. You know, I watched this before he ran his 40. I wrote. I'm guessing he's a 4.5. I wrote, or a 4.48. Mm. Right, he's definitely grabby when the receiver goes vertical because he doesn't trust the speed. Right, but other than, and at this point, the Auburn kid, I had watched him, right? I wrote, other than the Auburn kid, some of the change of direction stuff is as good as anybody I'd seen at that point, right? It's all about, he has it all except the elite speed. That was basically my big thing with him. But the elite speed is a real issue. And the fact that he ran 4.47 at his pro day, right? You know my thought on that. You run 4.47 at the pro day, that probably means it's 4.55 at the combine. Maybe four. Most teams put on a tenth. If you ran 4.47 at your pro day, that means you run 4.57 in the combine, right? Because the computer is that much more on top of the movement and the finish line. So, yeah, those would be the things that worry me. But again, just like Terrion Arnold, except I like Kool-Aid McKinstry better, is that he is a really good player. He's going to be ready day one. He can't play outside. He needs to be in the slot, but I wouldn't be shocked if he gets healthy in time that he'd be starting in the slot for somebody next year.
Yeah, so you guys were at the combine, Pete says, and you were scheduled to interview him when he got stuck in the medical tent. It turned out that that's when you found, I don't know if it's a tent. Do they have a tent there?
I think they call it a tent. So
he had that Jones fracture that he had surgery on. An anonymous NFC regional scout says he is a serious guy on the field and he knows ball. You rarely see him bust because he's always prepared and he's really natural in coverage.
Sure,
so that'd be good.
That's what I was saying. He really knows, like, you could tell he knows, oh, it's this coverage, I got help here, or I don't have help here, right? I don't have help here, so the ball would be snapped, and he'd go jump out on the shade to the side to go, like, I know I got nothing to help me here. You could tell stuff like that, right? I really like this kid a lot. And, again, I think he's high second round. Between, again, the size, the body, the change of direction, the short area movements, acceleration, and all that. And again, it's not a first rounder to me or anything like that, but I think we're talking, you know, second round for sure here.
So those people that are about to bash you on X on Instagram,
I really
will
like
not hear
kids.
What you just said about both those Alabama players who you like a whole lot. And you also like the defensive back from Michigan, Mikey Sainristil. He was I loved him just because a converted wide receiver.
Yes.
He goes over, plays defensive back. He's learning on the fly at Michigan, you know, a team that's expecting to win. And they played through their defense and won through their defense, and he was a big part of it, got huge ball skills. You see him, you know, making highlight plays all season long. So I'm glad that you liked him. What did you like about him so
much? Well, like, you know, natural, first off. He's kind of like to me, he's a lot like Dax Hill, who came out of Michigan a few years ago. It's like, is he a nickel? He might be able to play some safety, do all of that, right? He's not really the guy you want to be on the outside. He's not big enough, nor does he have the top-end speed. But again, like some of the guys we're talking about, like Kool-Aid we just talked about, the change of direction, the ability to flip the hips and all that, I mean, it's elite. I mean, he's smooth as hell with all that stuff. Incredible feet, and because of his wide receiver background, he's got great, like, feel for the offense, and he knows how to play the ball and do all that, let alone he's got a knack to find the ball and tackle people, right? He's one of those guys. It's like when I see a guy like that, I go, it's Rondé Barber-ish in the way. He just has a feel for the game. He does everything really damn well. And, yeah, to me, he's got, like, the ability to be one of the better slots in all of football, right? Maybe mid to late second round, I think, is where I look at it.
So, Gentleman TBD says, how do you view the value of the nickel position in today's NFL?
Right.
And how could it impact a prospect like Mike Sainristil's draft stock?
It's really valuable, but usually that player does not have something that is an elite trait that's valued in the draft quite as much as it till when you finally get in the NFL and people can see it on a yearly basis to go, well, damn, this guy he is this quick to cover all these jitterbugs inside and do all this crap. Like, I can't believe it, right? You know, so there's great value, but not the same type of value, again, for the draft concerns or for how you're concerned with the draft or, like, for how they're valued in the NFL. The outside corner is still the place to go. I mean, that's still the guys we voted for all pro and all of that. They're outside elite corners. The guys we talk about that are the best corners in football are on the outside playing that position. You know, nickel's hard, don't get me wrong, right? We know that. I mean, it's if you're playing nickel man-to-man all game long, it's you got the whole field to cut any way you want. But more times than not, nickel's a little bit more about feel, tackle. Oh, you have help over here. You don't need to worry about doing that. It's a little different skill set that's involved. But when some of the best hips in the draft, this guy. I mean, his hips are incredible, right? His feet are incredible. His burst is really damn good, right? You know, his turning of the hips, the backpedal and drive on the football, all that. Like, day one starting nickelback, you can tell he's like a quarterback on the defense, communicating rules, doing all that, right? You know, takes on blocks for a guy that's 182 pounds, like, not afraid to mix it up in the run game to a different level compared to the other guys we're talking about at DB,
sure,
right? Where you were like, shit, nobody told him he's 182. You're not supposed to take on that guard here. You're not supposed to do
that.
Maybe
they should tell him.
Right? But it's just the size and straight speed were the only negatives, right?
Yep.
And the speed isn't bad. It's just not ideal, again, for the elite corners in the NFL that you're talking about having to cover the elite receivers.
Carmageddon wants to know how many corners in this class can start day one.
Ooh.
Ballpark this here.
Yeah, let me look here.
Take a look at the teams.
Take a look at the teams.
How many could start day one?
You know, out of the ones we talked about, I mean, of course, I think those guys can start, let alone the two Bama guys. We just talked about Sainra still.
There are a couple other guys we will talk about.
Yeah. You know, and then there's, the other guys we're going to talk about and some other guys, too. Got some, like, I don't know if he's ultimately going to be a corner. Maybe he should be a safety. You know, it's a little bit of that. But, like, legitimately start, I'm going to say out of this group, like, week one starters, out of all the corners we have, you're probably going to get, like, four, maybe five, right? And then there's going to be another group of, okay, hey, it's week four or five. We know he's better than player starting in front of him. He might have a few things to learn. Let's throw him out there, right? Then you get that next wave of guys too. But, you know, I feel like it's probably that, you know. But a lot of contributors, I guess that's where I would say this is different. I think you got a lot of guys that can help out. They might not start, but, oh, this guy needs a blow. Or, oh, this week, you know, we like you in the slot versus this guy, and we think you could do that. Or, you know, like I said, maybe you should just play safety, and you're playing safety, and you're pretty damn good at that, and forget the fucking corner position.
Pete notes here, maybe more quantity than quality.
Yeah,
in this,
I think
corner,
that might be the that's the right way to say it.
Which is great for a team. If you want to get a guy in the third round, maybe even fourth round,
exactly,
a guy who can contribute for you.
Right.
So let's throw some other names out here. Cooper DeJean from Iowa.
Yeah, right.
A realistic take says, what do you think about Cooper DeJean playing all over the field? Seems he has great instincts and athleticism and could be very versatile. With the right scheme, I can see him playing safety and in the slot as well as outside corner. Feel like some teams could really value this.
He's definitely got some instincts and knows how to play the game. I don't know if he could play outside corner in the NFL. To me,
just the color of his skin.
Well, you know that. No, but he, you know, there's stuff to like. Of course, I love his body. He's thick. He's strong.
I think he is fast.
He is. I mean,
I think he is. He's not that fast.
I don't know how fast he is, right?
I mean, he makes plays. Like, you watching the Big Ten and covering
them, he's
better
at returning punts and looks faster doing that sometimes than he does covering receivers.
Interesting.
Okay, that's what I'll say. When he gets an interception, sometimes I go, where's that gear when the guy just ran the nine route before or whatever? Like, where's that gear? Like, what the hell? The ball got in your hand. All of a sudden, he's like, ah! And then I'm on a DB, and I'm going, well, you just let this guy catch a five-yard route. This guy just caught a 10-yard route. Why isn't the same aggression attacking there?
He's out of position. He's to be a wide receiver.
But and you know, here's the biggest thing, and this is tough here, right? But I do think he's more safety. I watched him and went, I think he's more Eric Weddle than corner in the NFL. Or maybe he's nickel with that safety hybrid type of thing, right? Because he certainly has the build and the thickness and the physicality to tackle and be involved in that part of the game. Let alone, I think he's got the instincts to be nickel or safety. Again, I think the raw explosion on the outside, that would worry me, right? Mm. You know, one, he doesn't play quite as big and as strong as he is, right? I would worry about bigger receivers, right? He grabs way too much. To me, he was one of the grabbiest people in the draft as far as the corners, the top tier guys, at least from what you talk about, right? That was another thing, right? Another where I'd go, they don't even play man that much at Iowa, right? And all coaches, if they have good mans or corners, are just like, hey, let's play man and we'll blitz or we'll do this, right? So those are little things that definitely bother me. But a little tight in the hips, a little also heavy-footed, and you know, and getting in and out of breaks. There's definitely some extra steps there, right? Now, he's got pretty good acceleration coming out of the breaks. I will say that, and there's no doubt about it. But it's usually after I'm like, damn, that was like three little choppy steps he had to take to stop and then come break out, where I want to go, the guy I watched, you know, DJ James or, you know, Nate Wiggins, I mean, it looks like how does their knee not blow out? They stick their foot in the ground so hard and just make one step and go out, right? So those are the little things, right? There's just a little lack of specialness. He's a smart player, good ability, but it's not eye-popping. He does have great hands, right? But I wrote, I'm not sure he's a corner full-time. He might be more Eric Weddle, you know.
So maybe you should include him in your safety
rankings. I know, he might be. Yeah, exactly right.
Kind of interesting.
You know, the other thing I was a little surprised with is doesn't play the ball as well as I would have thought in some of the down-the-field situations, like for a guy that's got the ball skills that I know, if you put him on offense or his background and all that, that was a little surprising to me in that area too.
I will say there was one game I was looking forward to seeing him play in, the Penn State game, and Iowa just got railroaded in that game. I mean, the defense played like 90 plays, so I don't blame him too much for tiring out, but he was not great in that game against Penn State, which I was like, oh, this is a chance for them to go, him to go up against. Then that wasn't even like a great offense with great wide receivers, but he just
too many underwhelming plays. Again, good player, don't want to say anything like that, but I again, like, you know, I know I've seen things where people say he's in the first round, and I just want to go, you know, Chris Sims, negative Ghost Rider on that one. You know, to me, like, I wrote down 65 to 85, right? Okay. That was where I kind of see it. More towards the end of the second, early third, I think, ultimately, is where he goes off the board.
How about the Missouri guy, Enos Rakestraw?
Yeah, Enos Rakestraw. Enos Rakestraw is another one where I'm not so sure he's not a safety, right? I love his, like, he wants to hit, he wants to tackle, he wants to mix it up. He's got some attitude towards him, right? He's got all of that, but he is like just not fast enough that you could trust him, right? Like Ricky Pearsall, he had no chance covering Ricky Pearsall from Florida, like none, right? There's other games where you look at it and go, ooh, he can't cover this guy here like this. I think he's ultimately like, and again, his ability to like accelerate, be aggressive, do all that, I like that, right? But he's an aggressive tackler, right? He wants to bump and run and get his hands on you because he knows he can win that because he's hoping it doesn't become a track meet, right? Awesome tackler, right? Talked about the foot in the ground. Right, got pretty good patience at the line of scrimmage, you know, really comfortable with all movements. And then, like I said, the attitude, the intensity, right? There's like he's got some C.J. Gardner-Johnson attitude about him, right, where you could tell he's going to hit you. He's going to let you know about it. If you don't get the first down, he's going to let you know about it, like all that type of stuff, right? You know, but like no way you could play him on the outside. To me, this is more nickel safety type of guy. Right, nickel safety type of guy, and nickel in certain situations, right? But like the guy you want him on your defense, you know, because of that swagger, tough attitude that we talked about, right? But you know, I just don't trust him in any situation versus man coverage. If he's in the nickel, I want him in zone, right? And then of course, you know, at safety, other than that, that's the big thing. And I think honestly, he's probably we're talking about third round when we get into that too.
One more player that we're going to talk about here, and that is Renardo Green from Florida State. Juiced Verhedge 4 yep. says, "Hi, fellas. Quick question on Renardo Green out of Florida State. He is a good corner who played in an incredible defense. How much stock do you put into the fact that he was on a team with such a great defensive line? Does that hide some of his deficiencies? Love the pod."
It does a little. He's exactly right.
So he played more press coverage than any other draft-eligible corner this year in football. 270 snaps this year.
Right.
And so I looked at that and I was like, all right, context clues.
Yeah.
They trust him in those, you know, one-on-one situations, but it could also be that they trust the defensive line to not give those wide receivers a whole lot of time to get open.
I think that's what it is, part of what their formula was. Challenge him at the line of scrimmage, disrupt their looks a little bit. By the time the quarterback kind of waits on the guy or whatever, you know, Jared Verse is going to be knocking his head off and we'll get the sack, right? Or the, you know, the big white D tackle that kicked ass at the combine, right? Got a good look, longer type corner again. Didn't love his legs, right? I wish they were a little thicker in the thighs and all that. Like you just said, I love that he plays man and bump and run and all that. They're well coached, right? That's where the LSU game is misleading a little bit. Because, like, and here, this is why I also like the LSU receivers, right? They only run, like, four routes for the most part. And their offense is pretty, like, it's pretty, like, telltale. If the guy's on the outside, he's going to run a go route, or he's going to run a six-yard hitch, or he's going to run a slant route. You know, Florida State's well-coached. Renardo Green knew that, so I think it looked a little more competitive maybe than it should have been, let alone the ball, like we talked about, didn't go to neighbors a few times where you're like, he was open.
And it didn't. Yeah,
that could have been that could have been scary if they threw the ball to him there.
Yeah.
Right? So I wrote, one of the things I wrote, I go, the LSU game's a little overrated. It's not what everybody thinks, right? You know, burst and acceleration is good, right? It's not wowing. You know, he's strong, but he lacks, again, the top-end gear that I think we all look for at that position, right? And he's got a glaring tightness in his hips. That, to me, was the biggest thing. Let alone, you said, Rutt, 200-and-something snaps of press.
Yeah.
I would, to me, he held more than any other corner I watched. I mean, he is a walking pass interference call. He is definitely going to have an adjustment period there to his game because, yeah, it was physical, it was in your face, all of that. But, I mean, there are so many 10-yard, 12-yard routes where I'm like, well, that's PI every time in the NFL. He can't run an in-cut and you grab him with both hands and pull him back and then undercut him and think you're going to get away with that in the NFL, right? Right. But, you know, he's a little, I think, more Seattle 3-ish type of guy. That's kind of how I would look at him again, right? You know, tightness in the hips, doesn't flip the hips all that well, right? When he has to change direction or restart, it's a little underwhelming. He's a little bit of a straight liner that way. A little bit heavy, clunky-footed type of guy. But he does have a very good jam. Like I said, strong, Seattle 3-ish, you know, versus bigger, not real quick wide receivers, he will match up really well.
Hmm. All right. Yeah. So those are the names to talk about. And, of course, the homies can tweet you and we can talk about this more. And Devin, at some point, will be here to talk about these corners with us. So I think this is a good opportunity to end the pod with a kind of a holistic view on this position. And L'Jarius Sneed was traded. I don't know if you heard that news. Breaking news here. He was traded to the Tennessee Titans from the Kansas City Chiefs. What was it? Kansas City ended up moving up 31 picks in the seventh round. They got a 2025
third round pick.
So this is not one of those, you know, give me year one and next year's two. This was definitely a lesser cost, although they did have to pay him as well. And so that's
part of
factors
it.
In. Thick El Gretti says, why are proven corners being devalued so much? L'Jarius Sneed was top three in the league last year and got pitiful compensation. Is it difficult to project future productivity, devalued position, abundance of draft talent? What do you think it is?
No, I think with him, right, I mean, again, he's got a contract that's, you know, $19 million a year, and he's getting paid towards the top of the market. Yeah. Right? I think there's a few things here. One, that was his first truly elite year, right? The other years were good, but this was the first year we went, hey, I think maybe he's one of the top corners in football. So, right, so that hurts him a little bit. Also, what hurts him and what hurt the trade value as far as that, it's not about the devaluing of the player. It's that everybody, again, like we talked about, kind of knows Kansas City doesn't want to sign him to a long-term deal, right? They're paying Mahomes a ton of money. They're paying Chris Jones a ton of money. Yeah. They're going to have to pay Trent McDuffie a ton of money. They're probably going to want to pay George Karlaftis a ton of money. They're paying Juwan Taylor like the highest paid right tackle in football, right? You know, they got Travis Kelce, who's up there as far as tight ends are concerned. They have two younger cornerbacks in Watson and Williams who are damn good. What's the point of drafting good and doing all this shit if you're not going to let these guys come up and replace some of the guys that, you know, hey, he's awesome, you like to keep him, but it's too high priced. Okay. We can't have it all.
So I get that, but should that matter, though? Because all it takes is a couple of teams to want him, which I think did, that will drive up the price. Like, even though you know Kansas City's not going to be able to keep him, but we know Tennessee likes him, and the Lions want him.
I like
him. And this team wants
Tennessee.
Him,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I know. So it seems like that shouldn't matter as
there
much
must have
because...
Been the, well, then also then the contract plays into it.
Well, that I think
that's
I would agree
the
with
biggest
that.
Thing. So all the things we just talked about, and then what you're talking about, too, teams call and go, hey, we really like Legarius. Well, hey, we'll talk. Hey, yeah, he's up. We're up to talk to a trade, but you got to talk to his agent. And then they talk to the agent, and they go, what, fuck, he wants... $48 million guaranteed. He wants $20 million. Shit, we weren't expecting that. Okay, hey, we're out of it. We're out of it. I'm sorry. We like the player, but we can't afford that right here, right? So I think there's probably that too, as far as how much money you're throwing at that type of player. Do we
and
believe to that
capital.
Extent?
Yeah.
And the draft capital and all of that plays into it. I don't think it's devalued the position. I won't say that. I don't. I think there's still, you know. You look at the really good teams in football, right, and the best defenses, I think that's one thing that we know they have, okay, right, where it's who were the top three defenses in football last year? The Browns.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, holy shit, corners are fucking awesome, right? All three of them, right? Kansas City is number two. Awesome corners, right? The Jets, pretty damn good corners, right? Yeah, the Cowboys at five, I mean, when they have Diggs and Bland, that's as good as it gets, right? You know? So I don't think it's totally devalued there that way. You know, I think teams are just a little picky and choosy about who they really pay the top-end money to. And, again, I think for the most part, you're seeing only the guys that, back to our rankings in that conversation, only the guys that can live on an island and go, I got you. Hey, coach, don't worry. I can cover Tyreek Hill. We don't have to devise a whole game plan to help me out today. Those are the guys that I think you're seeing getting paid. And again, when you talk about, you know, Trayvon Diggs, Marlon Humphrey, Jair Alexander, Denzel Ward, right?
Johnson, the Bears guy.
Jalen Johnson, what are we talking about in those guys? None of those are nickel guys. All those guys are on the outside covering the best receivers in football. And so hopefully that helps people understand my rankings a little bit and where I value that guy a little bit, right? The Darius Slays, the Charvarius Wards, that type of guy.
We've dipped into defense now. Yeah. On Wednesday, we look at edge. I'm curious about this now.
Yeah.
I'm curious if any of those edge will surpass your love of Mitchell.
Quinyon Mitchell, I know. Yeah. I love me some Quinyon Mitchell. He's got that attitude I like. It's that Devin Witherspoon, Aqib Talib, just in your face, right? He looks like a Darrell Revis in a lot of ways. Darrell was quiet on the field, but yeah, the play, the explosiveness, right? The cockiness, the ball skills, right? Yeah, Quinyon Mitchell is definitely a top 10 pick. And like I said, if it was a college that was on his jersey that everybody was a little more warm and cozy with, it's definitely top 5 pick. The player, the specimen, the athlete is worthy of a top 5 pick in the NFL draft. I just don't know if everybody will be able to swallow, we took somebody from Toledo at number 4
they can't,
or whatever.
They shouldn't, and he should drop to 29 where my Detroit Lions can take him at an appropriate level for a player that played in the MAC. Thank you.
Yeah, thank
We've
you.
Determined.
All goes back to the Lions. All right, everybody, I hope you enjoyed the cornerback rankings. Some good discussions there. We'll be back Wednesday. Edge rushers, like Ahmed said, we'll dive into all of that stuff. I can't wait. I'm kind of a few guys through here so far, right? Looks like it's a pretty good class. Looks like there's some top end guys to love too. So that'll be a good talk. And then, you know, next week we'll probably Monday getting a little AMA about the wide, not the wide receivers, the DBs and the pass rushers, and take questions for you, and hopefully we unpack it even more. You know where to find us. Subscribe, rate, review. Ahmed looked cute in his blue pants today. Yeah, way to go. Good job. He did not sweat through his armpits. We're very proud of him. It's because he's not drinking poisonous energy drinks anymore. We figured it out. Peace out, homies. Be good. See you on Wednesday. Clap it up.
Clap it up.
Vanguard is working hard to balance opportunity and risk for investors in this time of volatile yields. We know financial advisors are working hard to do the same. Visit Vanguard.com/fixed income today. Important information. All investing is subject to risk, including the possible loss of the money you invest. Bond funds are subject to the risk that an issuer will fail to make payments on time and that bond prices will decline because of rising interest rates or negative perceptions of an issuer's ability to make payments. Vanguard Marketing Corporation, distributor.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.